It's Thursday, the 3rd of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Brian Roberts. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Gorilla_Radio. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast for one day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Don't forget also to check out Moneyball.com.au, Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site, so make sure you're checking that out and getting involved in all the tournaments they've got running over there for NBA and NFL, and they run some soccer stuff over there as well. So that's moneyball.com.au. All right, we're here to look at the games from Wednesday. Also going to do a preview of the games for Thursday from a daily fantasy point of view. As Michael Bolton says,
let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night. There was all the signs were pointing to this being the case. Steph Curry. He's pretty good. Traveling to Charlotte, his hometown on Del Curry night. You just had the feeling, and I mentioned this yesterday, that it was based on just a gut feeling that he was just going to go out there and he was going to try and just destroy things, and he did. He scored 40 points. He had his fifth 20-point quarter of the season. He shot 14 of 18. I think there was a stat that I tweeted out today from Synergy that he shot 2.2 points per shot. That's unheard of. And he only took 4 free throws. 40 points, 8 triples, 3 rebounds, 5 assists. Just an incredible, incredible night from Steph Curry. Just to go on with his incredible, incredible season. He's putting together one of the greatest seasons we've seen in recent memory. He's still averaging over 5 three-pointers made per game this year. And 2.5 steals as well, 6 assists, 52% shooting, 94 from the line. We all know how good Steph Curry is at this point. We all know what he's able to do from a fantasy point of view. He is just, and the Warriors are just, they're just tearing things apart. You don't need me to go on and wax lyrical about how good Steph Curry is, really, because we've seen it plenty of times already this season. He's put up some pretty big numbers, and this is just another one. And he only took 31 minutes to do it. So Steph Curry gets himself another dose of the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night. I'm going to head to the Los Angeles Lakers, and I'm going to look at Lou Williams, who played 33 minutes off the bench, which is an issue in itself to me, but he did. 12 points, 2 threes, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, and 7 steals. That's a huge night from Lou Williams. Obviously, the thing that got his overall value up there with the 7 steals, that's not something we can expect for him for the season. He's averaging just 1.1 steals on the year. He's not providing much value overall this year, and in 25 minutes a game. Yeah, subpar scoring, not many threes. Everything's taken a dip from last season. Even playing the same minutes, his field goal percentage is way down. And mate, that's what happens when you play with really bad teammates. And it was a strange signing when it happened in the offseason. I don't know what Lou Williams' purpose there is at the Lakers. Now, he played 33 minutes here, which I said is not ideal. But it was a game when they didn't run Nick Young out there at all. Still don't like Lou Williams playing 33 and D'Angelo Russell playing 27. But maybe Byron Scott knows better than me, because they got the victory over the Washington Wizards. Lou Williams is only really a consideration for deeper leagues, maybe some 12-team leagues in certain situations, but he just hasn't been good. The minutes, thankfully, haven't been too high, and his production is way down, so I don't think we need to be too concerned about Lou Williams for this season. The young gun of the night. This guy's going to get it pretty much every night he plays, is what it feels like at the moment.
Was there just
Kristaps Porzingis, another great game. There's no other way to put it. He only played 30 minutes, 17 and 10. He hit 2 threes. He had 4 blocks, 2 assists, 6 of 10 from the field, 3 of 3 from the free throw line. And I've mentioned this a couple of times about, you know, is he the Knicks' best player? It's getting real close, to be honest. He is just putting it up on a nightly basis. He's a top 15 player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 15.6, 10.6, 3.6 blocks, 1.1 threes on 48 and 82. His field goal percentage was way down to start the season. It is definitely coming right up now. He looks more comfortable. He's getting more minutes. He's getting more shots. He looks dominant. And Karl Anthony Towns started off red hot. Sam Mitchell has inexplicably been limiting him. I don't really know what the story is there. You'd have to say that Porzingis is in the box seat for Rookie of the Year at this point. You would have to. With what's happening with Jahlil Okafor, with the suspension and the off-field stuff, and his play dropping off considerably, Towns being limited by Sam Mitchell, Porzingis has been... I was high on him. I thought he was going to be really good. I didn't think he was going to be this good. And this is... hopefully you were able to grab him. You would have been able to grab him off the waiver wire to start the season or draft with the last pick or two. Been absolutely amazing. Not one person could have predicted he would be as good as he's been. So just lap it up. Just enjoy the Kristaps Porzingis ride. He is he's putting on a show basically every night he's out there, and that's awesome. The dud of the night, Kemba Walker. Not his best showing. 31 minutes for Kemba going up against Steph Curry. Didn't go shot for shot with Steph. He took 16 of them. He hit 2 of them. That's not good. 4 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Didn't get to the free throw line. Just not a good night at all from Kemba. His field goal percentage had been way up this season. This is back to Kemba of old, this sort of performance. I don't think we got too much concern to really worry about. It's a bad night against the best team in the last couple of seasons, against the best point guard we've seen in the last couple of seasons as well. I don't think there's much reason to be too panicked there, but there's a chance that his 44% mark on the season from the field starts to come back down to that 41, 40 and a half sort of range, which is still improvement, but not in that mid-45 range, which is really good for a point guard. He could start to regress down to that level because he had been red hot to start off the season, but just not a good night from Kemba Walker at all. The DFS value play of the day is John Lua from the Phoenix Suns. He was priced at 3,700 and he put up 40.7 points. John Lua played 39 minutes with Markieff Morris sitting out with that knee issue, 20-6 with 5 assists, 2 threes, 2 steals, and a block. Mentioned this yesterday about Alex Len, how he had a huge game yesterday, but the Suns had been reluctant to give big minutes to their centers. Well, they played with no Markieff Morris and no Tyson Chandler, and Alex Len played 15 minutes. So they were running a lineup. Basically, their front court was John Lua and Mirza Teletovic, two small guys, two stretch players running as the 4 and the 5 for the whole game. And that's the trend we've seen from Hornacek most of the season, is that he's going to go out and play, you know, play small, play stretch guys, play guys that can hit threes. And Teletovic and Lua combined for 6 threes together and 38 points. Now, I don't think that Teletovic and Lua are going to be must-own players or guys who are going to take starting roles and play 35 minutes a night. But in this situation with Markieff out, with Chandler out, Len got limited, and it worked out well for them. And they've been playing pretty well this season. Lua at 3,700, if you put him in, and hopefully you're able to get him in with a late swap, because once that news of Markieff Morris coming out, and we knew that Lua was getting into the starting lineup, there was every chance at that sort of salary that he was going to put up pretty big numbers, and he duly saluted. Let's now have a look at the rest of these games with the box scores in a little bit more detail. Just bring them up on the screen for you guys watching along. And if you don't watch along on YouTube, I know everyone can't always watch live, but even if you watch on YouTube later on, you can see the box scores as we talk, if that's something you prefer. The first game, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Washington Wizards, one day after being the Sixers' first victory of the season, they traveled to Washington and they beat the Wizards, who were one day off beating the Cleveland Cavaliers. Pretty weird, huh? Kobe Bryant, 31 points for Kobe in 36 minutes. 4 triples, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. That's 8 triples in 2 games for Kobe. It's also a lot of shots. But I mentioned this before. I mentioned this yesterday. I've probably mentioned it before in other times, that Kobe still has fantasy value if you're ready to punt field goal percentage, because the volume's massive and the percentage is terrible. So Kobe does still have value, but you've got to be set up the right way to make the most of it, I guess. It's really tough in a roto league. He's not going to be a 30-point scorer very many times this season, but he's going to be able to accumulate some nice numbers, at times, but you've got to be able to deal off that bad field goal percentage. He's taken 28 three-point attempts in the last two games. It's a pretty big chunk. He's hit 8 of them, but 28, that's a lot. So your field goal percentage is going to hurt. But he can still rack up some numbers. So Kobe shouldn't be on waiver wires in every league. There are some leagues where maybe there's not enough, or not a team who's going to fit what he does. But I picked him up off the waiver wire about 2 or 3 weeks back for a team that was a punt field goal build. And I've been pretty happy with him for what I need him to do. D'Angelo Russell played 27 minutes. Not a bad line. 13-4-3 with 4 steals, while Jordan Clarkson went 18-4 with 3 steals. So good games from all those guys. And Julius Randle, 15-19 boards with 2 steals. He's a good scorer. He's a good rebounder. The problem with him is his fantasy value is going to have, you know, not good percentages, which he didn't have here, and the defensive stats will lack. So the fact that he added 2 steals is a real bonus here. He still has to be owned pretty much in every 12-team league. I don't think necessarily every 10-team league. He's going to have fluctuating value, but the thing that makes him look better than he is a lot of the time is the two categories where he's the best at are the two categories who have the biggest numbers, points and rebounds, the most easiest categories to get double digits in. And he might get, you know, 12 and 10, and that looks great, but if he gets zeros all over the place, his overall value is not ideal. But he still has a place, and he still can be used in pretty much most leagues. And Roy Hibbert had a real stinker here, 2-3 with a couple of blocks. He did get 31 minutes, though. The Lakers ran a relatively small rotation. Aside from Lou Williams off the bench, Brandon Bass played 17 minutes, Meta World Peace played 12, and Larry Nance played 17. So we didn't see Byron Scott extending things out, and I'm pretty okay with it. I would like D'Angelo Russell to play more minutes. Would have liked him to get near 30 minutes, but, you know, otherwise, not too bad. And they got the victory. John Wall with the second big game in a row, 34-7-11, 3 threes, 2 steals, and some nice shooting. So hopefully he has now started to turn the corner. Same as Marcin Gortat, who went 18-10 with 2 steals and a block. Both those guys started off the season very, very slowly, but are putting up some pretty good numbers of late. Brad Beal's shot is not falling. 11-2-6 with 2 steals and a block and a 3. And I think Brad Beal's a really nice example of someone to use that at the start of the season, he was shooting at about 55% from the field. And he looked fantastic. And that's why he was a massive sell high to me. Now, I'm not saying this because I'm saying, oh, you should have sold high on Brad Beal. It's just that when you see someone start the season, and this is something I'll have to make sure I remind people when we head into next season, is that when you see something happening with percentages that are just way, way, way above what players normally do, or way, way, way below, it inflates or deflates their value significantly. So Brad Beal, when you looked at the first 2 weeks, he was like a top 20 player. But he wasn't never going to continue to shoot 55. Now, he's not going to shoot 33 like he did in this one all the time. But he should stabilize at some point down to around 40s. And if you can get someone who believes Bradley Beal is a top 20 player when he starts the season off shooting 55%, that's the sort of move that you should be making to try and really reclaim value on that. Now, there are guys who, you know, first or second year players, who do have jumps of their field goal percentage of 5, 6, 7%. And that's relatively normal, but not necessarily a guy who's been in the league 3 or 4 seasons. That normally doesn't happen that way. And it's one of those sort of tricks in fantasy to keep an eye on, because it can really really cloud your vision of a player if their percentages are way off to start a season. Jared Dudley got another start, 32 minutes for him, 8-3 with a couple of threes. He's that really sort of deep 12, 14 team league value. The minutes are nice, but the production's not high. And Otto Porter's production is in the toilet at the moment. 7-6 in 30 minutes for Porter with 1 assist, nothing else. I'm still holding on to him, but his spot as a must-own player is definitely coming under review for me. Gary Neal returned to action, played 13 minutes. That limited Garrett Temple, limited Ramon Sessions. There's not much to really look at with those sort of guys outside of deeper leagues. And Chris Humphreys played 11 minutes, 9 points with a 3, because Nene was out again. Interesting to see what they do when Nene comes back, whether is it Humphreys or Dudley that loses minutes for Nene to play. Don't know. Oh, you'd think that Ryan Hollins wouldn't play 11 minutes when Nene comes back. He was just recently signed and he played 11 minutes here. You'd think that he's probably a guy who's gonna cop most of the brunt of losing minutes. But those other players are worth having a look at. The next game we look at is the Golden State Warriors and the Charlotte Hornets. Klay Thompson is starting to really round back into form. 21 points, 4 threes, 3 rebounds, a steal and a block. I don't think he was going to remain at that top 80 player that he was. He probably won't be a top 20 guy, but back into the top 30 is where he looks like he's sort of on his way to heading. A weird thing's happening with Andre Iguodala. With Harrison Barnes out, Iguodala's minutes are going down. I don't really understand why that is, but it doesn't. And obviously, it's not affecting the Warriors' play. He played 19 minutes here, Iguodala, and he was still productive. 8-3-3 with 2 triples, a steal, and a block. Andrew Bogut grabbed 11 rebounds in his 23 minutes, while Festus Ezeli went 9-6 in 16 minutes, and the same story holds for those guys. While Draymond Green went 4-11-9 with 3 blocks on a pretty bad percentage night from Draymond. Brandon Rush is the guy who started in place of Harrison Barnes again. He played 20 minutes here, 8-4 with a couple of threes, but he doesn't really have any value outside of really, really deep leagues, and that will probably evaporate when Barnes comes back. Onto the Hornets, Nick Batum. A really nice night from Batum again. 17-8, 3 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He's doing it all this year. There was no Al Jefferson, so Cody Zeller started, and he really struggled. 6 points and 3 rebounds in 17 minutes, and it was Frank Kaminsky who got the bulk of the run here. 27 minutes for Kaminsky, 16 points with 3 triples, 1 block, not much else. But interesting to see the minutes distribution there. I don't think that you're going to go and rush to add Kaminsky in a 12-team league. If you added Cody Zeller in a 12-team league, which I did personally, in a team where I was just hoping to get some rebounds with Jefferson going out, I might hold, I might drop. I'm still yet to decide, but there's not a lot of love there for Zeller from Charlotte. And that's one of the things you really need to pay attention to. What does the team think of the player? You can think all you want of him, but what does the team think? And they don't seem to trust Zeller enough to give him big minutes. Spencer Hawes played 20 minutes here for 12-5. Tyler Hansbrough played 11 minutes for 8-3 with 2 steals and a block. So the minutes were sort of going all around the place. Marvin Williams played 30 minutes, a steal and a block and 6 points, 6 rebounds. Not a great night from him. Jeremy Lamb, 13 points with a couple of threes in 21 minutes. And PJ Harrison started. He played just 5 minutes. His status remains the same. He doesn't have fantasy value, only for very, very, very deep leagues. The next game we're going to take a look at is the Phoenix Suns and the Detroit Pistons. I already talked about John Lewis' big game. Eric Bledsoe was huge as well. 21-4-9 with a couple of threes and a couple of steals, while Brandon Knight went 22-2-4. So this backcourt is putting up just big numbers all the time. Devin Booker also got in on the action. 18 points with 3 triples in 23 minutes. It's very hard to rely upon him, though, because Hornacek will chop and change his minutes quite a lot. In a dynasty league, there's definite intrigue with him. In a deep league, you obviously have some value there. Mirza Teletovic played 39 minutes, 18-4 with 4 threes. The minutes for him and Lua, as I mentioned earlier, were inflated because Morris and Chandler were out, but they've been playing quite well. So 12-team leagues definitely want to pay attention to Teletovic if they need threes. I'm not saying that he's a must-add or anything like that, but he's in a situation where he's pushing these guys for minutes. Alex Len, after yesterday's big game, 6.7 rebounds and a block in only 15 minutes. And this is why we weren't in any hurry to rush and pick up Alex Len. PJ Tucker played 39, while TJ Warren only played 21 minutes here. Warren outplayed Tucker, 12-4. Tucker had 3, 6, and 5 with a steal and a block. And if you added Warren, I still probably hold, but he's a bit all over the place. And that's to do with the way that Hornacek runs the rotations. On the Pistons, another huge game from Reggie Jackson. 34 points, 3 threes, 16 assists, a steal. Big night there. Marcus Morris had his best game in quite a while. 24-14 with 3 threes and 2 steals. And Ersan Ilyasova also finally got big minutes. 35 minutes for Ilyasova. 23 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 threes. And that's to do with the fact that the Suns went small as well. It's a little chicken or the egg. Who went small, who didn't, you know, which one went small to combat the other one. But they both went small. And so Ilyasova was able to get big minutes and stay out in the court, you know, quite a bit against guys like Teletovic and against guys like Lua. Andre Drummond still played 42 minutes, though. He went 22-12 with 2 steals and a block. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope played 46 minutes in the overtime game, 10-6 with 3 steals. Stanley Johnson only got the 21 minutes here, so not a great night from Johnson, 7-2. But if you picked him up, I'm still holding, and I want to see exactly how this pans out, but this is what it's going to be like. It's going to be rocky for rookies in this first month. There's going to be some big nights, some poor nights, and if you're desperate for category wins really early, it's not easy to stomach a lot of rookies in fantasy leagues. The next game is the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Knicks. Robert Covington, not his greatest night. 10-4-3 with two threes and a steal. That's still an okay sort of performance. And Rishaun Holmes with Jahlil Okafor suspended. Holmes played 18 minutes, went 11-3 with a couple of blocks. Nerlens Noel went back into the starting lineup. Wasn't all that impressive, and that's a bit of an understatement. 6-6 with 3 of 11 shooting with two steals. Let's see what happens in the next game with him. But the Sixers played a little bit of a weird rotation. Jeremy Grant only played 20 minutes here. Not his best night either. 6-4 with 3 blocks, but he is a consistent source of blocks at the moment, and I don't mind him in a 12-team league format. Nick Stauskas played 24 off the bench. TJ McConnell got 26 off the bench. Hollis Thompson played 27. The rotation was spread very, very thinly. You would think that they're going to go with that Noel and Grant starting front court again with Okafor out for the next game, but no one here is a massive let's run to the waiver wire and add sort of player. On the Knicks, Jose Calderon played 27 minutes, 11-2-5. Just consistent low-end value for him, and you probably think that he's a guy that should be on someone's roster in a 12-team league, but not necessarily yours. Aaron Aflalo played 23 minutes and went 13-8, while Carmelo Anthony played just 26 minutes, shot the ball poorly, 5 of 16, 12-6, and like the Sixers, the Knicks were able to spread their rotation out quite a bit. Good to see Kevin Serafin again getting involved, 17 minutes for Serafin, 8-6, a steal and a block, and he is definitely someone that I'm keeping an eye on. He's someone that is producing in limited minutes, and when he gets big minutes, he's putting up much bigger lines. I'm not adding him outside of maybe 16-team leagues at this point, but he's someone to watch. Robin Lopez has not been lighting the world on fire. Lopez played 22 minutes here, 6-5 with a block, and Jerian Grant played 21 minutes, 12 points with a block. Nothing to really write home about in this whole game, really, except for the play of Kristaps Porzingis. Toronto and Atlanta is the next game up. Kyle Lowry was dealing with an illness, but if you looked at the box score, you wouldn't be able to tell that. 31-5-5 with two threes and two steals. He continues to be a surprise top 10 player this year. Bismack Biyombo played just 27 minutes in this game, and it wasn't due to foul trouble. It was due to the appearance of Lucas Bebe Noguera, who played 16 minutes. 4-7 for Noguera with a block, and he was a guy that when Valanciunas went down, I was excited. I wanted to see this guy play because I think he does have fantasy potential if he was able to get minutes. 17 minutes is a good start. He played 6 the game before. Biyombo is pretty much who we thought he was. He's that guy who's limited offensively, can rebound and block shots. And he's still going to have value. You would think that Biyombo would continue to start and will continue to play around that 30-minute mark. But I like seeing Noguera get these extra minutes. The biggest, Biyombo lost 5 or 6 minutes, but Luis Scola lost a stack as well. 20 minutes only for Scola here. 8-9 with a steal, and Patrick Patterson played 23 minutes, 6-7 with a couple of threes. If you added Scholar in 12-team leagues, he'd been trending down the last three games. You can move on from him. Damari Carroll struggled a bit here. 23 minutes for him, 5-6. The three steals are still pretty handy, and Corey Joseph got big run again. 34 minutes, wasn't a great performance from him. 10 points, 4 assists, and 2 steals, but the minutes are encouraging if you're looking at adding him in a 12-team format. On to the Atlanta Hawks. Thabo Sefolosha. What? 33 minutes for Thabo. 13 points, a 3, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 2 blocks. What do we do with Thabo at this point? He's putting up value that is becoming really difficult to ignore. He's playing more minutes than Kent Bazemore, and that's pretty clear at this point. In his last 6 games, he is a top 30 player, averaging 9.8 points only, but 0.8 threes, 5.8 rebounds, 1.8 steals, 1 block, 57% shooting, very minimal turnovers. Just putting up great, great numbers. The biggest impact I think he has is really limiting Kent Bazemore. 26 minutes for Bazemore, 9-3 with a 1-1, which is still okay, but the fact that Sefolosha is playing so well is going to limit Bazemore's ability to get back to 30 minutes. Bazemore hasn't cracked the starting lineup since he and Sefolosha have both been healthy. And I don't know if I think it's going to change. We'll see. This is a little bit of an odd game as well, because when Thabo Sefolosha is his second highest scorer, you know that a lot of things didn't go right, and they really didn't. Paul Millsap went 14-9, Al Horford 12-9 with a couple of blocks, Kyle Korver had 12 points, Jeff Teague went 11-5-10, so just sort of middling performances from a lot of different players here. Dennis Schroeder's 12-team league value is pretty much toast. 14 minutes for him, 8-2-4. He's going to be great if Teague is out, but him playing next to Teague is not happening. They played exclusively as, you know, backup to each other, basically one off the court, one on the court. There is no point in really having him to hold on to in a 12-team league. I can't see the benefit of that, because you're going to be losing stats galore. The Denver Nuggets and the Chicago Bulls here. Kenneth Faried played 29 minutes, 14-9 with a block. That's okay. Will Barton, 16-8 with a 3 in 27 minutes. Again, we're obviously still holding on to Will Barton. Nikola Jokic played just 10 minutes here. He was benched in the second half. It's because he was getting torn apart by Pau Gasol. So they had to put JJ Hickson back into the lineup, who hadn't played the previous two games. Hickson played 16 minutes here, 5-6 with 3 steals. I would imagine that Jokic continues to start, but his value is definitely not as great as what we thought it could have been. Joffrey Lavernier played 21 minutes. Yusuf Nurkic will be on his way back soon. And Jokic has played well, but he hasn't done enough to stamp it and go, this is my job, none of you are getting it, because that's not what he's doing at this point. So if there's someone you're looking at moving, grabbing in a 12-team league, Jokic can probably be moved on from in most scenarios. Gary Harris has now passed the concussion protocol. He didn't play in this game, so Randy Foy got another start, but Harris will likely be back in the starting lineup in the next game. And if you found his value useful before, then you'll probably find the same value there again, with some decent scoring, some threes, and some steals. Emmanuel Mudiay just killed your percentages. 2 of 13, 0 of 2 from the line, 4 points, 7 assists and 2 steals with a block is sort of okay, but he has not been great. He's only got value in certain head-to-head builds. That's probably about it for him. And Danilo Gallinari, 13, 5 and 4, not a great night there. Pau Gasol, I mentioned, was huge, 26 and 19 with 3 assists and 4 blocks. And we look at the box score and we see Nikola Mirotic playing just 5 minutes. That's because he copped an elbow in the face, suffered a concussion, so he's going to miss games. You'd almost guarantee that. 3 points for him in those 5 minutes. So that allowed Joakim Noah to play a much bigger role. 35 minutes for Noah, 9 and 11 with 4 blocks. You can stream him in for short-term value, I think, because you think that Mirotic is going to miss a couple of games here. But be aware that 9 points is probably close to his season high in scoring. Jimmy Butler, 19 and 6 with a triple one, with a really poor shooting night. But 8 of 8 from the line sort of helps him in that regard. And Taj Gibson grabbed 11 boards off the bench. Dougie McDermott also played 29 minutes off the bench, which is good to see. 11, 3, and 2, but I'm only grabbing him in deeper leagues. While Derrick Rose, he was trying to be worse than Emmanuel Mudiay. He was almost there. He went 3 of 17 from the field. 12 points and 9 assists is good, but it's almost impossible to own him unless you're punting field goal percentage at this point. He is just hurting that category so, so bad. And you have to think there is definitely some impact from the double vision that he suffered earlier in the season, because he said it was going to linger for quite a while, but he has been atrocious, shooting 34% from the field, 13 points, half a three, 6.1 assists. I can understand. You don't want to own him in roto leagues. You can't own him in roto leagues. He should be dropped in all rotisserie formats. And in a lot of head-to-head formats, there's no point in owning him. You have to be a very specific team, much like Kobe Bryant, to be able to deal with Derrick Rose at the moment, because the percentages are just absolutely horrible. The next game is the New Orleans Pelicans and the Houston Rockets. Good win for the Rockets. They really needed that one, obviously. Anthony Davis, 29 and 13 with a couple of steals and a couple of blocks. Ryan Anderson chipped in with 19 and 10. Drew Holiday sat this one out, so we saw... Who was it? Eric Gordon. That time completely blanked. Eric Gordon went back into the starting lineup and he played 33 minutes. 10, 2, and 2. We can't make any judgment on this, though, of what to do with Eric Gordon, because Drew Holiday was out. So if Holiday comes back, does Gordon go back and play 19 minutes in the next game? I don't know. I guess we just have to wait and see on that one. Tyreke Evans looked really good again. The shooting percentage, not good, 2 of 9, but 10, 6, and 8 with a steal and a block. He obviously has to be owned, and he would have already been owned by now. Ish Smith. This is really disappointing. Ish Smith played 13 minutes with Drew out. There's no other way to say that he is done, unless Elvin Gentry realizes that Norris Cole is not good, which he should have realized by now. Norris Cole played 24 minutes, 5, 3, and 3 on 2 of 10 shooting. But if he's going to prefer Cole to Smith, then Smith's done. You can't hold on to Smith anymore in 12-team leagues. You're probably going to find it hard to hold on to him in 14-team leagues, to be honest. Alonzo G offered 4 points in his 23 minutes, and he's a 0. And, of course, let's put in the worst center in the NBA, Omer Asik, back into the starting lineup and play him 22 minutes, 6 and 4. for Ashik. We don't need to own him anywhere. That pushed Alexei Ejinsa back to the bench. He went 6-3 in his 9 minutes, and the same thing still applies to Ejinsa. When he plays, the minutes, the fantasy stats will come. We just don't know if he's going to get the minutes. James Harden went 24-10-6 with a 1-1. That's pretty stock standard James Harden at this point in the season. And Patrick Beverley's really starting to come along here. 10-2-5, 2 steals, 2 threes, and a block. He has value for a lot of 12-team leagues. Clint Capela battled a lot of early foul troubles. He played just 16 minutes, 4 fouls, 6-4. Now, the stats per minute are pretty good, but the foul problems are an issue. That allowed Terrence Jones to get back into the rotation somewhat. 15-4 in 25 minutes, a 3, a steal, 2 blocks. There are going to be nights where he does this, but you would have hoped that he would have played more minutes than 25 in a situation where Capela was limited like that and where Dwight Howard played 37 minutes. Now, Howard got 16 boards and 3 blocks. What are we doing with Terrence Jones? You can go and add him if you want. I'm not. I think that he'll go back to playing 22 minutes. And in general this season, he's been really, really bad. This is probably his best game of the season. Ty Lawson had his best game of the season, and that consists of 12 points and 6 assists. He played 29 minutes off the bench, so Bickerstaff is clearly changing his rotation around. No Jason Terry in this one with us, so Lawson got those big minutes. He played more than Patrick Beverley, which is a little bit odd. Maybe he comes back into calculations. I'm not going and adding Ty Lawson in shallow leagues, though. The Milwaukee Bucks and the San Antonio Spurs, speaking about odd coaching decisions, what the hell is Jason Kidd doing? I'm glad that they got absolutely pumped. Let's make a change to the starting lineup and let's put Jared Bayless as the starting point guard and bench Michael Carter-Williams. All right, that's odd, but you've loved Bayless all season. You've played him 30 minutes a game, every game. I can sort of understand what you're doing. Bayless has been producing well. He's been scoring, shooting pretty well. Offers a guy who can actually shoot as opposed to Carter-Williams. That's fine. Then the next game, you play Carter-Williams 30 off the bench. That's okay. I can get behind that as well. So then the next game, you just don't play Jared Bayless at all. Just take him out of the starting lineup and don't play him a single minute. And you start Tyler Ennis. Jason Kidd, you know, wanted to see what he had in Tyler Ennis. I'll tell you what you've got in Tyler Ennis. You've got a guy who's not good. It's as simple as that. Jason Kidd is extremely frustrating. They got pumped here again, the Bucks. The Bucks are terrible. They were good last year, and the Nets were terrible the first year Jason Kidd coached. I thought he was a bad coach, and I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Jason Kidd's a good coach. Maybe he's a bad coach again. I don't really know. I don't understand the logic behind... I didn't understand any of the logic behind Johnny O'Brien last season. I don't understand this Tyler Ennis move. I don't know what's going on. I don't understand the reluctance to play John Henson. I don't understand a lot of it. Everyone's being limited. It is hard to own. Look, you have to own Giannis. You have to own Chris Middleton. You have to own Greg Monro. But it's hard with everyone else. Look, Jared Bayless will probably head back into the starting lineup and play 30 minutes in the next game. So if you did pick him up, I'm holding on to Jared Bayless and seeing what goes on. But this is just maddening. It just doesn't make any real logical sense. And I'm glad they got their ass kicked by 25 points. Sorry to anyone who's a Bucks fan. But when you're pulling dumb shit like this, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Jabari Parker was 7-7 off the bench in his 26 minutes. He's hard to own for me in 12-team leagues. And Michael Carter-Williams, I mentioned he got 30 minutes, 4-5-4 with 2 steals. That is not ideal. I am still holding Carter-Williams because Kidd is unpredictable. He's very unpredictable. Carter-Williams will have to go through a stretch of about a week to 2 weeks of playing like 20 minutes for me to go, yeah, I'm probably not going to hold on to him. At this point, whew, just so frustrating. Now, because the Spurs kicked the Bucks' ass, every Spur player played in double digits minutes apart from Matt Bonner. So there's nothing to gain from looking at this box score. So I'm not going to go over it anymore because it was just a good old-fashioned ass-kicking from the Spurs. The Indiana Pacers, Paul George, incredible again, 31-10-4 with 5 threes, 3 steals, and a block. As the Pacers got the victory on the road against the Clippers. Jan Mahimi is really coming along as well. 14-7 with 4 blocks. He's a guy that they tried the hacker Jan strategy. That sounds terrible. And he's been making his free throws at not a terrible rate. But he's out on the court. He's putting up pretty good numbers. In a punt free throw build, he has to be owned. Rod Stuckey had his best game of the year. 18-5 in 32 minutes. But we're not getting excited there. CJ Miles moved to the bench in this game so Lavoie Allen could start. That is purely matchup based so that Allen could go up against Blake Griffin. Miles played 24 minutes off the bench. He still hit a couple of threes and had 10 points. So if you owned CJ Miles, don't panic here. He'll be back in the starting lineup and playing those 27 to 29 minutes. Pretty quick smart, I would imagine. Monte Ellis, 10 and 4 with a steal, or with two steals and a block. And George Hill was disappointing, 5, 4, and 3, missing all six of his shots. On to the Clippers. No Chris Paul in this one, so Austin Rivers started. He wasn't good, 9 points with one assist and two rebounds. Jamal Crawford had 16 and 6 in 37 minutes, and we had a Lance Stephenson sighting against his former team, so I imagine there's a fair bit of revenge factor in that for Lance. 19, 3, and 3. He even hit 3 3-pointers and a steal. His minutes have been trending upwards lately, but it doesn't mean that I'm getting excited and I want to go and own him in standard leagues. Paul Pierce had played 14 minutes. Wes Johnson played 9 minutes. JJ Redick suffered an ankle sprain in the first 18 seconds of the game, and he did not return. So if you're wondering why he only played 18 seconds, that's why. We don't know the severity of it at this point. He did return and sit on the bench, so it didn't appear to be like a horrible sort of injury. But it wasn't a great night for JJ Redick owners. Blake Griffin, 19, 4, and 6. Not a good night for him as well. 6 of 18 from the field, 7 of 14 from the free throw line. Not his best performance. And DeAndre Jordan was also horrible. Predictably horrible at free throws, 2 of 8, but 0 of 4 from the field for 2 points, 15 rebounds, and no other stats. Just not. This Clippers team is not playing well at all. They're rivaling the Rockets for biggest disappointments in the league. It's not pretty. That's the best way that I can phrase that, I would say. All right, it's time to have a quick break now, and then we'll be back to talk daily fantasy for Thursday. I saw ya. Take a look at these games for Thursday. And as I've mentioned a few times this week, it's a really, really nice schedule. We've got 6 games on Thursday. It's better than the 2-game slates that we sometimes have. 6 games is a perfect amount of games, as was the 9 games that we had today. So congratulations again to the NBA schedule makers. I'm sure you're all listening to this podcast. The first game of the night is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Miami Heat. The Thunder are favored by 2.5. We have a total of 200.5 in this one. Luol Deng is probably the main injury we need to look at here. He is questionable with that hamstring injury. If he doesn't play, you would think Gerald Green gets another start, and then he becomes someone to look at 3,700. But if Deng's playing, then Green has no value, or Green has minimal value, maybe that's best to say it, and Deng doesn't have a huge amount of value either. Justice Winslow has just been sort of going through the motions. 3,800, it's really low price, and he's getting nice minutes. He's just not doing anything with them, so we don't really look at him too much in DFS. Serge Ibaka I do like, though. At 6,400, he's been putting up almost 30 a game across the last three. This is the Heat have been a really good defensive team, especially against guards, but power forwards and big men have been able to put up some okay sort of numbers, and Ibaka's a guy that I think can thrive here. Goran Dragic at 5,600, the price is getting closer to somewhere where we'd be able to use it, but I'm still not quite there yet. Dwayne Wade was awesome in the last game. He does like national TV or his big sort of spotlight games. This is a big one going up against the Thunder. So you might want to take a bit of a risk on Wade at 7,100, but I don't love it. I don't think it's a great move. Steven Adams and Enes Kanter, not much to like there. 8,400 for Hassan Whiteside. He hasn't been reaching value of late, so I don't think that's going to be a very smart guy to play. 11,000 for Russell Westbrook. I want him under 11,000 to really be looking at using him. If I'm using him or Kevin Durant, Durant's at 10,500. Durant is the guy that I want. He's averaging 52 across the last three games. 10,500, he is a guy that I would rather get out there. Now, Westbrook's obviously good, but it's that extra 500 that might make the difference in the rest of your lineup. See how it goes. The Denver Nuggets and the Toronto Raptors are up next. The Raptors are favored by 10.5 points. The total is 196.5 here. Gary Harris should be back in this one, and you would think straight back to the starting lineup with that concussion issue. And Kyle Lowry dealt with illness during the game on Wednesday. He played out the game. He looked awesome, so you'd think he's going to play, but it's just something to keep an eye on, as is James Johnson, who missed the last game with Achilles soreness. That also contributed to Bebe Nguera getting some extended run. Bismack Biyombo at 3,900. We don't like what happened to him in the last game, but at 3,900, he still put up 18.6 points. I still think that he's one of the better cheap plays in daily fantasy. Corey Joseph's been on a pretty nice roll at 4,400, averaging 21 points. That's almost enough at that level to return value, so you can use him with a lot of confidence. And Kyle Lowry at 8,500 has also been pretty rock solid. You have to hope that he plays, and you assume that he will, but this is a really tasty matchup up against Denver, and they have a penchant for allowing points to opposition point guards, so Kyle Lowry is in a pretty decent spot there. Luis Scola looks appealing at 4,300, but the minutes have been way down for him, and his production's been way down. That is strictly only a tournament sort of option. And Emmanuel Mudiay at 5,800, I don't really know if I want to go near him. He has just been struggling big time. Same with Nikola Jokic, there's too much flexibility or too much variability with him. DeMar DeRozan at 7,500 is one of the better high-priced players on the board. He's averaging 31, and that's not too bad. From what I get looking at the slate of these games, I don't imagine it's going to be one of those days where you need 330 to cash in. I think it'll be a lower scoring day. So guys like DeRozan, who can put up value but without having a huge ceiling, can be useful. Probably the big news of the day from a fantasy point of view is something we're going to test in this next game, and that's the Orlando Magic and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 6. The total is 189.5. We'll start with the Magic side of things first. We don't know if CJ Watson's going to play. He's basically hasn't played in forever with that sore calf. I don't want to really deal with any of the Magic guys. We've got Scott Skiles coaching, and Nick Vucevic was awesome in the last game, but then he could also play 21 minutes. Alfred Payton's been pretty solid, but he could also play 21 minutes. We just don't know what we're going to get here, and the Jazz defense has been pretty good. So maybe I take a punt on Andrew Nicholson at 4,000, who's been Scott Skiles' boyfriend the last couple of games, getting him extra minutes, so he's someone to take a look at. Toby Harris has been playing pretty well lately at 6,500. Maybe we look there. Victor Oladipo at 7,500 has been thriving in his bench role. Maybe there, but there's a lot of risk associated with these guys. And as I said, they're going up against a Jazz team who's got this defense that really stifles opposition teams' fantasy production. But Rudy Gobert is out. He has suffered a grade 2 MCL sprain of his left knee. He'll be out between 4 to 6 weeks, it looks like. So a big part of that Jazz defense is gone. Are they as good without him defensively? You'd have to say there is no chance they're as good as they were with him as what they are without him. So that's when you look at that total and go 189.5. That's real low for a team without Rudy Gobert. And some of these Magic guys, if they're playing anyone other than the Magic, I'd be thinking they're not in that usual situation of playing against Rudy Gobert. So they're going to have bigger nights. So maybe you can take a risk on these guys, but then you've got Dick Hedidry from Scott Skiles that could limit any of these guys at any time. And that's where the risk comes in. Seasonal leagues, Trevor Booker. He's been putting up, I think I mentioned it on the podcast 2 days ago, that whenever he seems to get a start, he puts up big numbers. Or useful numbers, more to the point. In seasonal leagues, 4 to 6 weeks of Trevor Booker could be really beneficial to your team. So I went and added him in a couple of leagues today. I think that you should add him. There'll be a couple of poor games. Now, we don't know that Trevor Booker's going to start. We don't know that yet. Maybe they put Trey Lyles out there. Maybe they put Jeff Withey out there, which they did with Lyles when Gobert missed a couple of games earlier this season. It didn't go well for Lyles. They put Booker out there and move favors. If they put Booker out there and move favors to center, I think that works a lot better. We don't know exactly if that's what's going to happen. That's my prediction at this point. So for seasonal leagues, I'm all for going and adding Trevor Booker, but it depends on who you're dropping. 4,000 for Trevor Booker in daily fantasy. Obviously, we want some confirmation. Is he going to start? What's going to happen? But at 4,000, he could return definite value. I like Rod Hood. I like Gordon Hayward. I like Derek Favors. I like Alec Burks. I like all these Jazz guys. I think there's a lot of value in all of these guys. The Magic do allow a lot of fantasy points to the opposition. I think they're all in a really great situation here. They've all got fairly consistent roles, with the exception of Booker. We don't know what that role is going to be just yet, but there's a lot to like about all of these Jazz guys tomorrow. And I imagine there'll be some pretty high ownerships of guys like Favors and Booker in tournaments and in cash games. The Spurs and the Grizzlies is the next game. The Spurs are favored by 2, exceptionally low total here, 186.5, which is clearly not very appealing. Maybe Mike Conley. Now, 6,700, he was poor in the last game, but he'd been really good prior to that, averaging 35.6 over his last five games. So averaging 27.6 over his last five games. At 6,700, the Spurs do allow point guards to put up points. So it's maybe being a little bit contrarian. Maybe it's looking for a low ownership situation in a tournament, but Mike Conley can be used, I think. Danny Green, he's still just teasing us at 4,100. It's very hard to rely upon him, though. Kawhi Leonard at 9,100, I like him to bounce back. He didn't have to play many minutes in today's game. At 9,100, do you think he'd bounce back and put up some big numbers? And Marc Gasol at 8,200, it's going to be really hard to expect him to put up the 67 that he put up in the last game. But he'd been on a pretty decent streak. 8,200 is probably a little bit expensive for me going up against the Spurs. I don't want to deal with Zach Randolph. Matt Barnes at 4,400. He's been solid, but the Spurs do not... Kawhi Leonard does not let people score on him. So if Matt Barnes is playing the 3, he's in trouble. If he plays some 4, which he'll play some 4, then maybe that helps him. But there's not a huge amount to like in this game at all. The Indiana Pacers and the Portland Trail Blazers is the next game that's up. No real injuries to really be concerned about here. We're going to see Myers Leonard, hopefully, back into the starting lineup. He's priced at 4,700. He was great in the last game. I'm okay using him in lineups. Mason Plumlee at 5,800. Minutes been limited the last couple of games. Yeah, I'm hopeful that he gets a bit of a bounce back performance here. And Jan Mahimi at 5,100 has been really, really good, averaging 29 across his last 3. He can be used in a few situations. And opposition centers against Portland are able to put up pretty decent numbers. Paul George is at 10,000. He's been almost returning value that across the last 5 games, averaging 48 points. You'd have to think it continues. I'm all for going with Paul George, even though you're spending 10,000 on him. CJ McCollum at 6,800 has not been returning value for that price, averaging just 28 across the last 3. You need him to be a little bit higher than that. Damian Lillard at 9,500 also hasn't been returning value, averaging 32 across his last 3. 40 points across his last 5. It's and against the Pacers, who do lock down point guards as well. Not a great situation for him to play. And as you see, in most of these games, there's not a lot of great fantasy situations. So that's why I think that the number you're going to require to cash is going to be lower on Thursday's games than what it is from other slates. The last game of the night, the Boston Celtics and the Sacramento Kings in Mexico City. The Celtics are favored by 2, and the total is 215. So that's clearly the biggest total of the night. So we should be able to find some fantasy value in this one, and we can. Isaiah Thomas at 7,300, I think, is a decent play. He's averaging 33 points, basically, the last 3 games. That is solid. DeMarcus Cousins at 10,600, averaging 53. Lock him in. He's an awesome play at center. And Omri Caspi's been getting big minutes, with or without Cousins in the lineup, averaging 21 across the last 3. He's priced at only 4,200. If he gives you 25 fantasy points, you've broken value easily. You're well ahead of value. So I like what Omri Caspi's been able to do lately. Rudy Gay is probably a bit too expensive at 7,100. And Rajon Rondo, against his old team, what happens? He's priced at 8,300, so he's expensive. So you need him to do more than he's done the last few games. His minutes have come down. He's only averaging 30 in the last 3 games and averaging 31 points in that time frame. I don't put a huge amount of trust on him here. Maybe he puts up a big line, but the last time against his old team, he didn't have a great fantasy night. The Mavericks hacked him, and his minutes were limited. He still put up 30 points, but at 8,300, it's not enough. Avery Bradley at 6,000 is someone to pay attention to. I think he's averaging almost 28 across the last 3. He can be used at that salary, which is not all that high. Jared Sullinger is always a risk, but at 6,100, I'm okay with using him. And other big men, not so much. I don't think there's anyone else that I really, really love here. So overall, it's just not great situations for DFS players, not great matchups for a lot of people, but you can still build successful lineups. I'm pretty confident in doing that. Let's have a look at the daily fantasy plays for today, or for Thursday. Corey Joseph at 4,400, Isaiah Thomas at 7,300, and Kyle Lowry at 8,500 make up the point guards. Shooting guards, we've got Rod Hood at 4,800, Alec Burks at 5,400, and DeMar DeRozan at 7,500. Small forwards, Omri Caspi, 42, Gordon Hayward, 6,500, and that Hayward at 6,500 seems real cheap. Kawhi Leonard at 9,100. Trevor Booker at 4,000. Obviously, we need to hear if there's any news regarding starting lineups. Serge Ibaka at 64 and Derek Favors at 8,000. And the centers, Bismack Biyombo, 3,900. Yan Mahinmi at 5,100. And DeMarcus Cousins at 10,600. All right, guys, that is it. We are done for today's podcast. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And make sure you're also following the Basketball Monster Twitter account, which is at @BaskMonster. Where myself and Kyle and Matt tweet out and Ken tweet out all the latest news as it's happening in preparation for lock time. You'll see retweets of beat reporters and our own adjustments as they happen through on that Twitter account. So make sure you're having a look at that Twitter account and giving them a follow. Not that they're really struggling for followers. Follow me, follow them. Subscribe to this podcast. Download each episode. That's always helpful as well. And leave a review on iTunes. I do thank you very much when you do that. Or leave a comment on YouTube or subscribe on YouTube. There are multiple ways to digest this content. That is it, guys. Thank you once again for tuning in and listening and interacting and all that sort of stuff. I've been getting bombarded with Twitter messages, so I apologize if I haven't gotten back to you. I will get back to you with answers to your questions pretty soon. We're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.